Hey Anna, welcome to Inside Nearshoring.
Hello.
So let's probably first start with your little introduction. Please explain to our listeners who you are, what you do, and why you are here.
Sure. So thanks for having me here, first of all. My name is Anna. I'm Senior Business Development Manager. I cannot say that I've spent half of my life on this role, but I can surely say that I have quite a decent experience of some over a couple of hundred calls with potential and current clients of ours. So I will be happy today to speak a little bit about the insights and like basically about insights of my job.
Okay, perfect. Let's put a little of border between nearshoring and offshoring. We are calling our show Inside Nearshoring, but basically, of course, we mean pretty much any kind of shoring. Please make a definition from your side, nearshoring versus offshoring.
So generally speaking, both nearshoring and offshoring are about remote development services. When we're speaking about remote development services in countries, in the countries nearby, or at least in the same continent, we're speaking about nearshoring. When we're speaking about offshoring development services somewhere quite far on the other continent or across the ocean, we're calling that offshoring.
Okay, okay, good. So let's talk, well, from our perspective, let's start off offshoring more. I'm mostly now interested in your experience and your take about Asian markets. Just to explain to our listeners, Anna is Japanese fluent, and with her help, we had developed a Japanese market for our company. But speaking overall about Asia, Far East, why companies located that far from Eastern Europe may be interested in considering their remote development teams being placed to Ukraine, Poland, Romania, whatever?
So first of all, and today, as you mentioned, we will be mostly speaking about Japan and I would say Singapore, because these are the two countries from the Far East who are actually requesting our services quite often. But generally speaking, and honestly speaking, not all of the companies there know about Ukraine even a little bit. So when we're speaking about Ukraine for them, we're speaking about Eastern Europe in general, as most of our listeners are aware about. I'm sure for Japanese companies in particular, the biggest market for their offshoring needs is also Southeastern Asia. They've been going there for development services for ages, at least for a couple of decades. And they have everything there set up for their needs. So they would have bridge managers in place who would speak fluent Japanese, infrastructure. They would be like located in a time zone that is closer to Japan than Ukraine or Eastern Europe in general is. So basically everything works well. However, on the other hand, during these couple of decades, a lot of Japanese companies tried that. So some of them had great experiences there, some of them did not have great experience there. But anyways, from what we see in the requests that are coming to us, a lot of companies are looking for something different. So whatever their experience in Asia was, they are ready to try on something new. And when we're speaking about what new they want to try, it's usually about having a team who would be more as their partners and then take equal role in the technical discussions, suggest some technical know-hows, then hands to do the tasks that they set for the team. Because in Far East Asia, while they have a lot of decent and great resources and they are used to working with Japanese people in general, however, in most of the cases, it would still be about the client company setting tasks and the vendor basically completing the tasks. When we're speaking about Eastern Europe and Ukraine in particular, we're speaking about the developers who are ready to give their intake about the tasks. It does not work for all companies, and I have to be honest about that. Some would say we did not want to hear these comments, but then for those who did, that would be definitely a totally different experience from what they have there. And that's why, like, this is when Ukraine comes to mind and is spotted on the map for them. And when they come here, they're usually surprised about how talkative the developers are in general and how eager they are to share their opinions. So if this is what they are looking for, probably Eastern Europe is the place for that.
You mentioned about Japanese market specifically, that they probably have an experience working with somebody located nearby, like near shore. These are countries like Philippines or Vietnam or maybe China. But still, like, they somehow get to Ukraine and start working with Ukrainians or else Eastern European nations. What do you think about comparing, let's say, a Japanese engineer with somebody from here, from Eastern Europe? What are the differences, if any, and in the eyes of a Japanese client, is it a like experience of working with, let's say, Romanian or Ukrainian as it would be with Japanese, or it's still something very much different?
I think the experience starts being different from the very start, so basically from the recruitment stage. From what we heard from some of our Japanese clients, in Japan, it would take at least, like, let's say, I don't know, senior Ruby engineer, it would take at least from 4 to 6 months to hire a person. So they would have tens of people coming for the interviews. However, as there are not so many engineers there, they would still struggle with finding a person who would actually accept the offer that they would suggest him. On the other hand, in Ukraine, even with the market that is constantly getting more and more complicated to work on, we can say that it would take up to 2 months for the successful hire, but it's not 4 or half of a year. When we're speaking about the actual work with the engineers, I would say that speaking about the level, Japanese engineers are also very much skilled. They are also used to working with many companies overseas. So from technical point of view, I cannot say that come to Ukraine here, we'll find you someone who would be twice as good at as the person locally. But again, from the perspective of personality, most probably engineers, especially the ones before they become an architect or technical lead, they would be much more eager to share their opinions and their intakes on every stage of development and every task they have, every technical decision the company makes. Because in Japan, from what we hear, mostly it comes with the experience. So when you're a senior developer, of course, you would be ready to also share your opinions, especially when you're growing to a technical lead or an architect role. In Ukraine, on contrary to that, you would see that even in let's say juniors with a lot of potential, they would come and most probably they would actually know, maybe they would not know the technology that deeply, but most probably they would hear a lot more about some newest know-hows in technology world than sometimes even seniors would do, just because they are still very much motivated to learn and they try to kind of be up to date with all the news in IT world, and they are eager to share what they learned. So this would probably be the main difference. But again, it depends on what you're looking for. If you're looking for a very proactive team, and probably for diversity, because as Japan is still an island country that was closed for centuries, now we see that a lot of companies there, they're actually very much eager to get that diversity inside their teams. Just for the teams in Japan to get second opinion from the country who most probably been working with Western Europe and North America, maybe more than the average engineer would do in Japan. So this is what they are trying to seek here, and that would be the difference. Because in Ukraine, most of the engineers, even those who, for example, just finished their higher education, most probably they already have like 2 years of experience with some international clients. So their mindset would be already a little different. And this is what I think like clients from Far East, and not only from Far East, value in our engineers.
We're closing the Japanese topic for a while. Let's switch to something that I find myself quite interesting. I know for sure that there is a trend now when the biggest outsourcing nation in the world, India, comes to Ukraine, to our company specifically, to run the teams with us. So basically they're coming for Ukrainian engineers. Please explain to me and to our listeners how come the 1 billion nation with such a huge capacity on its own labor market is coming to Ukraine, and what's your take on it?
So honestly speaking, I've been also surprised a couple of first times when we got such requests. And as you mentioned, and you were right to mention that the number of such requests, it increased at least 4 or 5 times in comparison to even like 1 year or 2 years ago. So I would not connect it only to the pandemic as it was. It is more, to my opinion, it's more connected with a set of reasons. So there was a pandemic that put a lot of projects on a halt for some time. Then there was this period when basically people realized that unfortunately COVID-19 is not going anywhere, at least for some years from now on. So we have got this period where a lot of projects started from scratch, or maybe from like they continued their development. And moreover, we have got a lot of companies who understood that without digitalization, they cannot get into future. So if before we could come to the office, sit on the same table, I don't know, use some Excel sheet and basically divide the tasks between each other and go and work, like what pandemic showed to us that unless we are ready to change, most probably the businesses that are not would not be coming into future. So we have got a lot more projects than we hoped for, pretty much, which brought us to the problem that even with a lot of engineers on the markets like Ukrainian or Indian ones, we have seen the lack of them at least at some point. So from what we hear from our potential and current Indian clients, so what they saw is that they have many technical giants there who already came to India, like Google or Facebook. So basically such giants have taken pretty much most of the talented developers. So what they have now is the developers who were not yet taken by them, but yet with a higher average cost than it was ever before. So most of Indian companies, by coming to Ukraine, they are trying to find a market where they can still, like, basically the density of talented resources here is yet basically not just not just talented resources, but technical talented available resources is yet bigger here, because we do not have that many giants on Ukrainian technical labor market yet. So the density of such people is bigger, and this is what they are coming for. What amazed me actually is that many of Indian companies, they know exactly what they seek for in Ukraine, which is something that is different for them than, for example, it is for other countries coming to us. So they know exactly why Ukraine. They are well prepared. They know what they want to have, or what is the schedule of that, what is the time frame, what would be the costs. So most often you would not have to educate them on that. They know everything, they know what they want. While we spoke about the advantage of the Indian companies who come on Ukrainian market, there is also a small disadvantage. So given their nature, that they are more about the preparations, about the standard set of rules, which works for them in many cases. When they come to Ukraine, they are not always ready to the realities of the conditions on the market we have here. When we're speaking, for example, about labor conditions, about conditions for the average number of working days that are, for example, suggested by Ukrainian companies and so on and so forth. Because when Indian companies come here, they know about the potential costs, the period that they would need to hire people, but they are not ready to adjust their hiring conditions to what would be actually advantageous and interesting for Ukrainian developers to get a try to like sign up for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, clear. Good. Let's take another flight. And now we land to Eastern Europe, so where we are now. And what I find interesting, especially for the recent couple of years, is that we know for sure that we somehow have clients from exactly the same region, and it was never like that before. Please reflect yourself about what it is like to work with nearshoring provider who is located exactly in the same region, probably works on the same price range, probably speaks for a like mentality, but still these exchanges happen. And whether you consider these clients to be somehow more or less attractive to a typical nearshoring business in Ukraine.
So yeah, we indeed have a lot more requests from closer countries, from neighbor countries than we did before. I see the reason for that in basically exactly the same thing that we are having requests from India for. So the reason is that on the local markets there are not enough talents anymore, so companies are looking for alternative markets to try and find talented resources on. However, what I see as a main difference, speaking about like Indian companies that we have just spoken about and Eastern European companies, that while Indian companies come to Ukraine and they know exactly why Ukraine and what they want to find here, Eastern European companies are usually coming to Ukraine as a part of their company all over Eastern Ukraine. So usually they would not care so much whether it's like Ukrainian vendor who succeeded in meeting their need, or Serbian or Montenegrin or whatever country they find available and where they find the talents that they are looking for. Because the mentality is quite alike, so they do not have this approach that it has been Ukraine or we are staying inside our borders. So this would be the main difference. So for Eastern European companies, the vendor that was faster in meeting their need would get basically the project and the client. For us, I cannot say that there is a very big difference between the client from Eastern Europe and the one from Western Europe or from the US, for example. It's more about the approach. So I would not divide them into Eastern European, Western European, or whatever geographical location they are. It's more about like readiness to understand the market realities. And readiness to negotiate and find this point where it would be beneficial for both sides and not only, for example, for them because they came here, or not only for us. So it's all about the approach.
Okay. You mentioned, like, now you compared pretty much a likeness of Eastern Europe with Western Europe and North America. Let's talk whether North American clients and businesses coming for development services in general in their approach are somehow different from European ones, speaking overall about the continent. So is there a major difference in running these kinds of operations, and if yes, what these are?
I would not say that there is something like major, that people are so different that they are like coming from different worlds. For me, it's more about probably the scale of their plan for Ukraine. While for European companies, like many of them come to Ukraine as an experiment. So they're looking to find one or two people, and then when they see that the model works, that they like the talents, that they see the advantages as opposed to hiring people locally, they would be scaling up, but that can happen in half of a year, in a year, or maybe in a further future. As opposed to that, with American companies who come to us, we see that they have a pretty clear plan. So they know why they went for offshoring, and they see it not as an experiment, but rather as a strategical change in their teams set up. So many of them would be coming for more people from the very start, just because they do not see like kind of a reason to set up a team of two, because that team will not deliver. They would not be ready to experience everything with such a small team. So usually they would come and build a team of at least five people from the very start and scale up a lot quicker, just because this was their plan. But I can say that most probably it's also because of the basically that Ukraine is much further from them than it is from European countries. And speaking about that, I can say that when you're coming to hire remote developers in Ukraine, the time zone difference being like 2 hours or 3 hours, it's a lot easier to kind of try it, and then just, it does not work, let's go locally. It would not make such a big difference. As opposed to that, with American companies, they need to plan their approach very thoroughly. And just because they already invested a lot of time in planning how they would work with such a different time zone, who would manage such a team, how they would manage such a team, do they need a team lead or architect in Ukraine or not? So as they have this plan very thoroughly sought out before they even try to approach the companies in Eastern Europe or Ukraine, maybe this is the main reason for their for the difference in the scale of their approach that they come with us to.
Let's talk a little bit about overall the sales process in nearshoring company. What do you find the most challenging and complex part of the sales process? Like, yeah, anything you can say on that.
To my mind, the most challenging, and I would be probably like, this is something that I think is nothing as a know-how here. The hardest part is actually to deliver, because like there are different companies, different approaches. So when we are speaking about outsourcing providers, probably it would be like, while I have not worked on project-based outsourcing, I would suppose that the hardest part for them would be to suggest a setup and a proposal for the project that would be accepted by the client. While in our approach, to sell, so to say, or to educate about our services, in many cases you would have you would get a yes, let's give it a try. However, the harder part comes next, when it's not only about agreeing about the terms, about the conditions. This is the easier part, I would say. It's about how you can deliver afterwards. So how you can deliver to your promises, to hire within the suggested time frame, and the quality of the resources that the client would expect. The complicated part here would be that on a pre-sale stage, right, until we actually go into the recruitment process, in most of the cases, as many questions as we can ask the potential client, we would not fully understand what is the level and the basically what resource is ideal for them. So this is something that we can only see when they interview 1, 2, 3 people, we hear their comments, and only then we can find these ideal candidates for them. So to my mind, this is the hardest part, not only to promise, but also to keep our promises and to deliver. Because if we do, then most probably it will end up in long-term and successful cooperation. But if we do not, there is a big chance that they would come to another vendor.
Okay, good. Let's think about an ideal client. Can you describe one?
This is a quite complicated question, because honestly speaking, we have very different companies who come to us and who have successful cooperation with us. So the reason for that is not actually the reason. So we would have very small companies who have very small need, and they are trying their strengths on Ukrainian market, and we would end up having very successful long-term cooperation and scaling up their team. And on the other hand, we have these corporate clients who come with a very concrete plan to hire like 15, 20 people here, and we would still have the same like long-term good cooperation with them while they are completely different. But if to find these similarities between these very different type of companies, I would say that the ideal client is the one who is ready for like healthy cooperation. And by saying that, I would mean that there are two approaches, both of them do, like are not actually valid, but the one is the company coming to a vendor thinking, please like amaze me with what you have, just surprise me with what you can deliver and how far you can go. Because in this case, they expect for the vendor to be basically doing everything without any input from their side. In most of the cases, even if they can deliver first, most probably they would not be able to deliver with good retention just because the client would not be engaged in this cooperation at all. So there is other approach where the client comes and says, okay, we need you as a support, basically supporting partner, but we know everything. We do not need your help in anything but provision of this stuff that we cannot do from far. So this is another approach that also on a long-term perspective, like in many cases, it does not work just because they are not ready to hear what the vendor has to say. And after all, of course, the company can be first of all older, it can be more experienced, it can be very successful in their local market, but they cannot know the insides of Ukrainian market as the vendor does. So unless they are ready to hear the vendor's point of view and the vendor's input in their cooperation, most probably the team would not last long. So if the client is ready by coming to Ukraine to be first of all engaging in the cooperation from the very start, so being ready to suggest and to comment on the very first stages as in recruitment side, and then go on by listening to vendors' input about the team setup, about how it is better to retain the team, some maybe advice on or retention points for each team member. Most probably such cooperation would not live long as opposed to the one who is ready to hear and give their own inputs into cooperation. And this would work for both small and large corporate clients.
Let's see the pandemic times when, lots of things have changed. And obviously we're still in this period now when we can only guess what will happen later on. But returning back to the times when it was not Corona yet and remembering about all those times, is there anything that you as a professional, as a representative of nearshoring company, that you are missing from those times? And if yes, what would it be?
I would say that the thing that I miss the most is live communication with people. It's quite simple, but this is something that I believe we lack while online communication is almost there to kind of meet the needs, communicational needs of such companies and as ours, especially while we provide remote services. Still, I believe we lack people coming to us to see the team, to meet them, to meet us after all, and of course us being able to come to them to speak directly and not through the screen of the computer. But the other thing that I believe also changed during the pandemic a little bit, it's more because the needs have changed. So if before the pandemic most of the companies were coming to the vendor as a part of their strategy, because they still could hire locally, but for some reason they decided to set up a remote team. After the pandemic, many companies come from understanding that they cannot do it anymore. So they are in more rush to kind of set up a team, which also leads to the reasons and to the reasonings why they choose the vendor they start working with. So before that, I would say it was more about the chemistry about the vendor and the client. And right now it's more about speed of delivery. Of course, still there has to be some chemistry, some good relationship in place. But right now, unless you can deliver, you would not get good clients. So this is the difference. I cannot say that I miss what was before, but this is definitely the change that happened. And yes, at some points, I would like to see more clients who are coming in a more moderate approach, because usually with such clients, they have more time to look for very right people, which in many cases leads to more successful cooperation.
Okay, and finishing our conversation, please think of sharing an advice to somebody who is in position of maybe like thinking whether or not to try nearshoring services, or like, you know, how to do it. What would your advice would be to them?
Probably my main advice would be to first of all think whether there is a need to actually come to other country, because that need has to come not from inability locally. So let's say, for example, if you cannot hire for 3 years locally, most probably there is another reason but the lack of the resources locally. Think about like what you want to gain by going somewhere else to hire this team. When you have that reason reasoning and purpose in mind, think what is the main priority for you, because in any case, you would need to choose something. So whether it is speed, the quality of the resources, or cost of the resources, you have to understand what it is that you're ready to sacrifice and what it is that is the most important for you. So when you chose both of this, I would still say find a person from a vendor company whom you can trust. If you find this person and you believe that the person is not just kind of selling their services, but rather trying to find this point where you can meet in between, where your needs would be met, and you would still have an advisor in a vendor company whom you would trust with their like opinions and with maybe some thoughts on the further processes with the team. And then if you can do like these 3 points, I believe you would succeed in this cooperation with the vendor, and you should come to the other country to set up a remote development team. And after all, in many cases, your team is already remote. So why not try it somewhere else if you see a purpose in that?
We had a little bit of geographics today with Anna, and based on how she approached the questions and how she analyzes the inputs and like, you know, insights coming from all over the world, it seems that the world is global. It was global like maybe tens of years ago, but now it's even more global. The differences in between of the countries are not as huge anymore. We are still located in very much different time zones. We are speaking sometimes different languages. We are even different by mentality, but the differences, they get smaller and smaller. And it all comes to the actual need of a very particular business to consider whether they really need to go somewhere else country, whether they are ready for this, whether they have somebody they can trust to. This is what Anna had shared with us today. I hope it was insightful to you guys, and hope to talk to you next time. Thanks for watching us. Subscribe, like, and so on and so on. Bye.